presents Idaho Pulse with Tea Party Bob, your stethoscope on the chest of Idaho politics, and sometimes a boot. This is Idaho Talk Radio, IRDO.
Welcome once again to the Idaho Pulse. I'm your host, Tea Party Bob, and today we have one of our regular guests, the president of the Idaho Freedom Foundation, Mr. Ronald Nate. Now, we have quite a selection of topics to cover today, so let me welcome once again the Thomas Jefferson of Idaho, Mr. Ronald Nate. Good afternoon, Ron, and once again, it's our pleasure to have you on the Idaho Pulse podcast.
Bob, it's always great to be on here. Hanging out with Noogie Noogabauer and talking about how to make Idaho better, how to keep it free, how to restore lost freedoms. Whatever it is, we need to work on it.
I know. I've been trying to do it for about the last 20 years, and I'll tell you, I'm getting a little tired.
Well, I was going to make a joke about getting your Idaho pulse racing today because there's been a bit going on in the legislature this week.
Well, where are we going to start? What's the hot topic first?
Well, here's the first thing I want to talk about is that this week was kind of fascinating because I think it was Wednesday morning. We had both the House and Senate going at the same time. The Senate was discussing the school choice bill, H-93. And the House at the same time was talking about the Medicaid reform. Check that. I think this was Monday. And both of them at the exact same time were going on. Now, let's which one do you want to start with? Let's do the Medicaid reform. Did you know that Medicaid was expanded in 2020, you know, on a vote of the Idaho people? They expanded Medicaid. I guess it was in 2019, and then it went into effect in 2020. But they promised at the time it was on the ballot for Idaho that it would cost $400 million, but don't worry because the federal government will be paying a large chunk of this, in fact, 90% of it. And it'll be just peachy for Idaho because it'll make our medical care costs lower. Well, here we are, what, 4 or 5 years later, instead of $400 million, it's nearly $1.4 billion. We have ineligibles on the rolls. We have the cost per person going from $3,600 now up to, they wouldn't let us take the ineligibles off. And now we've been tapering it down. We have about the same number on the rolls as beginning, but because the costs have gone up so dramatically, we're now at $1.4 billion.
And I understand the costs were raised by about 60%. Is that correct?
Yeah, it's outrageous. And this is $1 billion on top of a $5 billion program. And it's mind-boggling just how out of control this is. And so this bill is about accountability, saying that, look, we can't have that if you're going to be on this and you're an able-bodied person, you need to either be working or at least volunteering 20 hours a week. So we're not going to create a culture of dependency with this. If you're able to work, you ought to be working to qualify for the program.
Let me say this. The fact is that in every state where they have instituted the work program, more people have fallen off of those roles.
Yeah, because imagine this. Once you go to work, you start earning money, and then before you know it, you're earning enough to not be on welfare anymore. It's an amazing thing. Proper payment controls. Get this one. It made me laugh that there's a certain number of folks who get benefits who really don't qualify for them. They were improper payments or that Medicaid is overpaid. The bill says you have to get that to below 5%. In other words, we're going to tolerate 5% of waste and fraud and abuse, but no more than 5%. And we're going to verify eligibility of those on it. So these are really just accountability controls. And if you can't do it, then Medicaid expansion is repealed. And so it's saying, get your ducks in a row, or we're going to take away the ducks. And that's it's the minimum we should expect for our government, right? So that's
Has this bill passed?
Yep, it passed the House on a vote of 38 to 32. No, wait a minute, 39 to 31.
Wow.
Yeah, something like that. It was a very close vote, and but barely passed. And you know what? The Democrats, the Main Street Caucus, the squishy Republicans were all saying, well, you know, if the program doesn't qualify for these accountability measures, the program's going to go away and so many people will be hurt by it. They're not worried about the forgotten man, the hurt of the taxpayer who has to pay for all this. So anyway, that's going on in the House. They're debating that. All the squishes and the Democrats are saying, oh, this accountability is too much. We can't have this kind of accountability because it'll ruin the program. At the very same time, over on the Senate side, they're debating the school choice bill, which is H-93. It already passed the House. And the school choice bill, by comparison, is minuscule. It's $50 million. And it's a tax credit saying if you don't have your kid in public schools. If your bill, it's not a government spending bill, except for the refundable part. And but you have the squishes and the Democrats in the Senate saying, oh, I am all for school choice, but I'm really disturbed because there's no accountability in this bill. There's, what if parents aren't educating their kids well? What if the private school isn't up to snuff? And so they're claiming that they cannot have a program that lets people keep $50 million of their tax dollars because they're worried that there's no accountability. Across the rotunda at the other place, they're saying, we can't have accountability in Medicaid. Waste the $1 billion. Just go ahead and waste it because we need to have the program. That's more important than the accountability.
So did anybody say anything about the $100 and some odd million that was supposed to be returned to the taxpayers because of the lower attendance in 24 that was actually allowed to be spent by the schools? Why didn't somebody bring that up? This is something you brought up in your pork program there. Yeah,
well, it was crickets on the floor. You know, they're only debating the bill in front of them, but it was just a fascinating dichotomy. On one side, they're talking about their hair's on fire about accountability for a $50 million school choice thing. And then on the other side, they don't care about accountability. Go ahead and waste $1 billion. And it was just fascinating. And also the school choice thing, it passed. It did pass. The conservatives won out, but the process of getting it there was not an easy test. It passed 20 to 15. So just by three flipped votes, you know, three senators going the other way, it would have failed. But it was amazing because the debate leading into it, you had some people who were worried about school choice, worried about parents keeping control of their kids' education. There's one senator in Canyon County, Brian Lenny, who said that he was for school choice, and this was on Saturday. But then by Sunday morning, he was adamantly against it because he was worried about homeschoolers being protected and families not being required to do stuff. But then on Sunday afternoon, Donald Trump sends out a tweet, congratulations to Idaho and Governor Brad Little, because school choice is coming. House Bill 93 is amazing. Let's congratulate Brad Little. And then suddenly senators started getting on board with it again, including Brian Lenny. So suddenly he was for it again. It was amazing. It was amazing.
What's amazing to me is our legislators, okay, mm-hmm. don't understand that the children who are homeschooled do better overall in the education process than they do in our school system. What is the matter with them? Do they not read anything at all?
Well, the more education freedom you have, the better the school results, because right now our public school system, going back to 2008, 2009, we barely spend $1 billion on education. And the reading proficiency and the math proficiency were stuck at about 32%. But since then, we've tripled public education budget without tripling enrollment, by the way, but we've tripled the spending per student. And reading and math, same, about 32%. No improvement.
Why am I not surprised?
I know. But then you look at reports about what the best schools in the state are. It's something like 8 of the top 10 are charter schools. No, oh, yeah. Schools with choice. Private schools and homeschoolers always outperform the public school kids. And so we're looking at this, and those who want to preserve the system, those who care more about teachers' unions and say they care about kids, they really don't care about kids. They want to preserve a broken system more than meet the needs of the kids. And I'm looking at the kids going, you know what, if we're going to spend this kind of money, we ought to get some results for it. And the parents being in charge of their kids' education seems to do better. Let's liberate education from the government system. Now, I know the Constitution says that the state needs to provide a common set of public schools, and that's fine, but it doesn't mean every kid has to be in one.
I absolutely agree with you. I've been fighting for school choice for so long, I've forgotten how long it is. And the fact is that you can pound the table, and I have been doing that for the last 10 or 15 years, about how bad our education system is, how we do not have a quality education. For the amount of money we spend, it's absolutely pathetic. And the fact that Trump has brought out to the limelight the fact that out of all the countries in the world, we spend the most money and we're last.
Yeah. And you know what? I look at this and I go, it's the system. I don't blame the teachers. I don't blame the students. I don't even blame the curriculum, but the system is broken. It is that it does not reward excellence. It rewards status quo. And the status quo is simply not good. Competition achieves better results. You look at the innovation that your competitor does and you better match it or you get left behind. And we just don't have that in a public school system. And I'll tell you this, I know that some of the biggest opponents to school choice are teachers and teacher unions. But teachers, listen to me, teachers are better off in school choice. When you have schools competing for good teachers, their pay tends to be better and they have better situations. They don't have to go begging government for pay all the time.
Well, we have one of the lowest paying teachers groups here in Idaho compared to the states that are around us.
Well,
and I don't know why they stay here, a lot of them. I would think a lot of them would leave after they get their basics in.
Well, that's always the threat. But you know what? When there's teacher openings, there's always enough candidates for them. We don't have schools going without teachers. So the pay must be doing something right. And gosh, the legislature has been increasing the pay quite dramatically since I was in there. Gosh, when I was in there, it was below 40,000. Now I don't know what it is, but it's probably starting close to 50,000 a year. And that's just for somebody right out of college. So, yeah.
So you've been in the system.
I was in the legislature. I went through the public school system as a kid. All four of my kids went to public schools. I've taught economics for 25 years, and a large part of my studies is on the economics of education. And I just shake my head because of the waste, fraud, and abuse that happens in public education. Let's just introduce some competition. It'll make public education better, too.
How did your children turn out in terms of the education process here in Idaho? Did you need to do a lot of help with them at home? Or did you find the education process they went through pretty reasonable and rational?
Well, you know, the public education system does not suit every student best. But my kids did just fine in public education. They were self-starters. They gravitated towards the AP courses and the teachers they liked. And so my kids did just fine. But I'm looking at the aggregate numbers. The average kid doesn't do just great. And so my kids did great. And you know what? If there was school choice and my kids were receiving the public education that they did, I probably wouldn't have chosen a private option. But there's a lot of kids trapped in public schools who need private options that don't have that ability to do it. Public education is not the best fit for every single student. I know that public education teachers unions will say, well, the private education will just take the best students. And so that's why it always looks like they do better. But I think that if your kid is doing well in the public school system and we open up private choice, I don't think they'll leave. if the public school system is serving your kid well, why would you choose something different? And
well, I always look at it from the viewpoint that public schools for the last 10 or 15 years, maybe even longer than that, have been more daycare centers than anything else. And a lot of the parents, both of them work. Public schools offer them the opportunity to continue to work. When you're in a private situation, when you have to educate the children yourself, well, then one of the parents has to be responsible for that. And that means that they don't necessarily have two jobs going for them, which means lower income.
That's right. My wife was home and was home when the kids went to school, was home when they got home from school. And so, you know, sociological studies show over and over again that the traditional nuclear family is the best situation for kids. And so it helps with their education, helps with their nutrition, helps with their sociology, helps with everything. And so to the extent that society encourages the breakdown of the traditional family, I think the kids are the ones who pay the price. And so, it's nice to have a parent at home.
I have to agree with you that certain children do take to it very well. I had three of my grandchildren who went through the Idaho school system. Mm-hmm. They all went on to college. They all have degrees. They all have good jobs. And then I had one who has had Asperger's, and he needed a special situation. But it wasn't within the Idaho school system. We had to take him out and put him into a Seventh-day Adventist special school.
Yeah.
But he eventually came around.
Yeah. My kids have done well. Three of them have graduated from college now. One with a graduate degree. My fourth kid is still in college and will finish up in the next year. And so they're doing just fine. And so many folks, when you do school choice, it doesn't mean all of a sudden the public schools are empty. It means a fraction of the public school students would then choose private.
And so, but then again, you have the other problem of, do you have enough private schools to handle a huge amount of children coming out? I mean, 50 million is not a lot of money. So we're not expecting to see an enormous amount of kids come out and try to get into private schools. But then again, you have to have the facilities available for them to go.
For years, even decades, public school system has been decrying that they don't have enough capacity. They need more school buildings. They need more teachers. They need more everything. Well, one of the answers to the slow capacity growth in public education is private education. So you give more choice. And the adjustment happens through the pricing and the money following the kid. As private schools do well, they attract students and they attract money, and that gives them the capacity to grow. Some people say, well, the rural districts, they won't have school choice. Not right away, but in today's technological age, it doesn't take much to start up a micro school or even an online school. There's so many different models for educating kids that, we have complete freedom of choice in our dining choices, don't we? But do we ever worry if there's enough restaurants to suit our needs? No, the prices and the profit motive take care of that.
Do you think that we eventually are going to see what I would call the AI educational tool come into being here? And then next thing you know, we're going to have one teacher for 500 or 600 students at one time, basically online.
I have no idea what innovation holds in store for schools. But, I look at wherever you have free markets, the innovation tends to do what serves the people best because that's what they choose. But it's when you have government officials or politicians or bureaucrats making the decisions of what they think is best for people, when you have that deviation between what's best and what people actually want and need, And so I tend to favor free markets because they direct the resources to the highest and best use and encourage innovation. And the profit motive is a great motive for serving people.
I agree. There's no question that when you have a profit motive, you always get better results. But
yeah,
then we don't, we have more socialists nowadays, I think, than we,
yeah,
than we do
Walmart
free market
me?
People.
Does Walmart love me? They don't love me. But you know what? They sure want to make me happy every day. Oh, yeah. They make me happy. They do well. And so the profit motive turns the greedy nature of people into a force that makes them want to serve others.
But that doesn't happen in government. There doesn't seem to be the same profit motive in the government itself. For that, it seems to be to let's squirrel it away someplace and hide it. And we never seem to be able to find it like we're finding out with our federal government now.
That's right. In government, the incentives are different. You don't do better for yourself by serving others in government. You do better for yourself by serving yourself in government. Get as much money for your agency as possible.
And so when you look at something like the teaching profession and the fact that the unions are so powerful, they have a lot of say in what's going to go on in your school systems. I mean, I read an awful lot about that on a weekly basis. And that's kind of discouraging. I was once told that we only have about 50% of the teachers in Idaho that are actually in the union.
Well, that's enough. That's enough to screw it up, isn't it? And so, yeah. There we are. And so, you know, there's a bill circulating through the legislature right now that says that you can't have automatic withholding for union dues anymore. Boy, those union folks are sure upset about that bill.
I just read it.
Yeah, having to go and ask the teachers to write them a check is a lot different than having it just taken out of their pay.
Oh, yeah. No question about it. I was very happy to see that bill down there. I don't know who presented it, but I'm going to have to thank them when I meet them.
Yeah. Hey, a couple other topics, Bob. What do you think about Convention of the States?
Personally, I'm against it. I have been for quite some time. I have a lot of worries about it. You know, they always say, well, you can't have a runaway convention. Believe me, I've heard all the arguments. Yep. I don't think we need a convention of states. What we need is to adhere to the original Constitution that was written by our forefathers. I don't find a lot of fallacy within our Constitution in any way, shape, or form. Yes, we have a few little tweaks here and there, and we have some misconceptions here and there, and we're finding those out as we see Trump coming into office. And those things will all be hashed out, I presume, by our judiciary on the Supreme Court at some time or other. Mm-hmm. But if anybody has ever taken the time to read the Constitution, and I doubt seriously that most people ever have. I have one sitting at my desk all the time. Mm-hmm. But my point is that if you understand what's in it, there's no reason to change it.
That's right. We just need to follow it. Yeah. That Convention of the States, there were two resolutions this week that narrowly passed out of committee to go to the House floor. And the idea is for Idaho to join the call for a convention of states. And I've always been against it. I'm like you, Bob. I'm like, our Constitution is well suited right now. And the thing is, a convention of the states, once you get there, can you imagine what this convention would look like? The fierce swarm of media and liberals circling that arena, trying to influence it, trying to say, hey, you know what? Now that you're a convention, you get to choose your own rules. You can propose amendments. The Constitution says you get to propose amendments. And one amendment could be to get rid of the Second Amendment. You think about what that would look like, about all those people saying, hey, we're cracking open the Constitution. We could do anything we want to do to it right now. I don't trust them. And by the way, they say, well, you know what? You just send good delegates there. Who would Idaho send? Would Idaho?
I'm not sure. Would they send I'm not sure
folks?
About that.
Would Idaho send Liberty folks? Or would
no, what? Probably not.
A Mike Simpson type. Would they send that kind of a guy? You know, I don't trust who Idaho would send, let alone California, New York, or Oregon, or whatever. And so you imagine the floor of delegates with some of the squishiest Republicans and most liberal Democrats. They're trying to decide what is best for our Constitution. I don't trust it one bit. And so,
in my mind's eye, if there were to be a convention like this, my mind's eye says to me, it looks like a overflowing septic tank.
That's what it would look like. But anyway, excuse me, I think we ought to watch out for that in the Idaho legislature. It passed out of committee. If it goes across the House floor, we got to get to work to stop that thing. So yeah, Idaho should not be joining that call. It's got trouble written all over it.
Well, I don't disagree with you, but, you know, they're going to bring it up. They're going to have a vote on it. I'd be very curious to see who votes for and votes against it.
Yeah.
Because that's going to tell us who's who.
That's right. But they'll focus on the reasons for it. One is term limits. I think we already have term limits. It's called your vote. Number two is on a federal balanced budget amendment, which sounds great. But however, do you think our federal government can exercise any fiscal responsibility? If they can't get it under control, you know what a balanced budget amendment does? It gives them the authority, nay, the responsibility to raise your taxes. They can't get it under control. They got to jack up your taxes to pay for it. And they will use the balanced budget amendment as their rationale for it, saying, look, Constitution doesn't let us spend into debt. We have to raise taxes for this spending. We have no choice.
Well, we have a balanced budget agreement here in our Constitution in Idaho, if I'm not mistaken.
Sure do.
But if that's the case, why do we have a rainy day fund of well over $1 billion?
Because they want to have the authority and ability to spend more than they bring in. Now, when I was on the budget committee, I brought this up. I said, our Constitution doesn't have a balanced budget amendment. It has a balanced spending part of it that says that the amount that Idaho spends in any given year cannot exceed the revenues from taxes in any given year. And so when they were proposing to do a rainy day fund, I said, that's great. I guess you can start a rainy day fund, but the Constitution prevents you from spending more than you bring in any year. If you can't spend more than you bring in, then the rainy day fund is unusable.
Now, let me ask you a question then. If that's the case,
yeah,
what's going to happen if 10 or 15% of the federal money that we are currently getting disappears and fades into the West with the sun?
It's a dangerous situation to be dependent on someone else, isn't it? And so if we're dependent on a federal government who shows no fiscal responsibility and shows a tendency to want to make rules and control the states, we're in a precarious situation. Idaho ought to be a beacon of freedom and a beacon of sovereignty. We shouldn't have 42% of our budget coming from the federal government. We need to be self-sufficient. We need to wean ourselves off the federal dollar and earn our own autonomy back.
You know, I love President Trump. I've known him personally years ago, but I have to tell you, for him coming out and saying congratulations to Idaho for the school choice, I sat there and said, I wonder if he really knows anything about Idaho. But I doubt seriously if he does.
I know. I wonder if he knows Brad Little. I wonder if he knows the kind of governor Brad Little is. But it sure puts Brad Little in a pickle, doesn't it? That bill is now on Brad Little's desk. It's passed both the House and the Senate. School choice, $50 million. When the governor got up and spoke at his State of the State, he says, I want to allocate $50 million to school choice. I want it to be fair and robust and accountability. So how is he going to say no? It's $50 million. It has more accountability measures in it than I want. I want more freedom. And the president has said, congratulations, Brad. Looks like you got your school choice. How's he gonna veto that?
Well, I don't know. I saw Governor vetoed the grocery tax.
Yeah.
The abolition of the grocery
tax. 2017.
Yeah. I don't put anything past these governors. I really don't.
Yeah.
You know, they run their own ships. And the problem is this guy has been steering us into the shoals for years.
What?
So I have to question his judgment in just about anything. First of all, I think he listens too much to his advisors. And I would believe that most of his advisors are hacks from IACI. It's kind of like the Public Utility Commission,
yeah,
who has three of its commissioners as past people who were working for Idaho Power.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's the same thing.
It's a revolving door for the insiders, the
but the, but But this is what we're trying to get rid of in the federal government. You would think, okay, that what we're seeing happen in Washington should be happening here. But I'm not seeing that. I'm seeing resistance to that. Because if you're talking about a budget going from 13 plus billion to 14 plus billion, that's not doing anything. That's getting worse. That's not getting better. So it doesn't matter what you do with the federal government. If you can't fix the state government, how do you operate?
You don't. I mean, people move here from California and Oregon and Washington because they think that Idaho is this beacon. And if we can't control our own selves, if our governor cannot be the conservative that he ought to be in a state like this, he got elected. It's a conservative state. He could be as conservative as he wants to be. But no, he caters to the special interests, caters to the cronies. So we don't have crony capitalism. We have crony statism because the statist policies follow what the cronies want. And so we have something like Idaho Launch that was passed a couple years ago. It's costing us $80 million a year for Idaho graduates to go to college in the careers that the Workforce Development Council decides are worthy of a grant.
And who is on the Workforce Development Council? I'm just curious.
Governor Little's cronies. They're people from the industries that have supported Brad Little and his campaigns and his Friends of Brad Little PAC. You look at that list of folks on that Workforce Development Council, they're all the crony insiders of Brad Little. And so that whole program is designed to be a state-run free workforce training program for employees that go to his crony businesses.
So once again, we have another organization that's been infiltrated with the political weeds, so to speak.
Absolutely. It's not even close. Yeah. And, you know, there's a bill in the House to repeal Workforce Development or repeal Idaho Launch just by moving up the sunset date. But that's not going to go anywhere. I'd like it to go somewhere. But the legislative leaders lack the will to actually do something conservative.
How are you going to change this? I mean, I've been trying to do it for many, many years, but I find that although we see some movement in the right direction, it's not enough to make a change. Most of the people, when I started doing this back in 2010, 2012, the legislators were a whole crew of new people that were coming in. Mm-hmm. The Jason Monks and a whole bunch of those types who have been in there now for 10 and 15 years. You can't get them out. And these are the ones who drive me crazy because of the way they vote. They're in the 50, 60, 70% category on your performance guidelines all the time.
Yep. I mean, Idaho Freedom Foundation, we do our Idaho Freedom Index, which shows how legislators vote. So we rate the bills, the legislators vote, and it shows who's conservative and who isn't. And you know what? The trend is very consistent. The longer you're in the legislature, typically the lower your freedom score goes. And you mentioned Jason Monks. Is he wanting to repeal the grocery tax? No, he just opposed repealing the grocery tax just this week because he just wants to raise the grocery tax credit, which partially offsets what is received by government in the form of a grocery tax. And so Idaho remains one of only four states to fully tax groceries. And you have so-called conservatives, so-called, and I emphasize so-called, conservatives preserving a system that benefits the government instead of the people. We're getting killed by inflation, but will they repeal the grocery tax? No, because those revenues go up when inflation goes up.
Well, two things here. I remember calling Jason Monks a liberal several times, and he came out and retorted, "How dare you call me a liberal? I am as conservative as I can be." And that's the whole key, as I can be.
As conservative as I can be. You know, that sounds so mealy-mouthed, mushy, you know. Be as conservative as you said you are. Be conservative as you ran on. You ran to limit government. You ran to shrink government. You ran to control spending. You ran to protect the taxpayer. And then you go and do all this big government stuff. And then you're saying, well, that's as conservative as I can be. The best I can be is 62% or whatever it is. No, if we had a bunch of 90%, even 90, I'll take 90. Even if we had 90% legislators, we could cut our budget by $2 billion. We could have households that had more of their money to spend on what they want instead of on what government wants. And we'd have economic growth like crazy.
Yeah, the unfortunate part is you're not going to get them to cut until somebody says stop. And I don't think that'll happen until you get a new governor in a seat. And I've been saying that for a long time.
Yeah. And so, well, we do our freedom index so that voters know. And the tide has been changing. It's not as fast as I want. But when I got in the legislature, there was like two reliable conservatives. And at the lack of sounding immodest, I think I was one of them and Heather Scott was the other. And now we're up to probably about a dozen or 13 in each chamber. But as the elections have gone on, we've been able to add more conservatives than we lose through attrition. And we lose them either by them leaving the legislature or becoming squishy. And a lot of them, unfortunately, become squishy and hang around a long time. We're adding to them more than they're getting subtracted. And so a few more cycles, and I think we're there to where in the Senate, they could elect their own leadership as conservatives. In the House, they're getting close to that. But every year we seem to lose a few conservatives, but add a few more. And so I'm optimistic for the future. And if we could do the same thing in the governor's office, just get a conservative for one term, it would be amazing what could happen in Idaho with a DeSantis type of a governor.
Boy, I agree with you 100%. And I've kind of been looking for that person. It's not easy to find somebody of that ilk that's willing to run the gauntlet, so to speak, here in Idaho. And it is a gauntlet.
Well, it would be a gauntlet of media and union types and the thugs. But he or she would become a hero in the eyes of the Idaho people. And to lower taxes, to cut government, to increase freedoms, you would be a hero. And not only that, not only just in Idaho amongst the people, but across the country. You know, we all know Ron DeSantis's name, not because he was a squish, but because he was a hero for freedom. And you know what? His reelection's almost assured in Florida. Imagine how assured it would be in Idaho if you had a true conservative in there.
You know, I've worked on two elections, one against Butch Otter when Fulcher ran, and the other one for Labrador when he ran against Ahlquist and Little, mm-hmm. which, of course, Little won by a plurality of 37%.
I remember that.
And the problem there was, number one, they have so much money. I mean, between the Iaki groups and the Little Let Me Have Another Term Fund, these guys are very well financed, and you have to find the money to fight them. Although I don't think you need as much as people think. If you have the right ideas and you have the right stature and you can present it to the people properly, I think you could win, even with the state employees being where they are and having that terrible swing vote. Mm-hmm. But how do you get somebody to run like that? I mean, I look at Fulcher, I look at Dorothy Moon, I look at Raul Labrador. These are three who I would say could win an election if indeed they ran under current circumstances. But would they run?
Yeah. I mean, conservatives, they don't have to outspend to win. Because all they have to do is outwork a little bit and let the people know what they're up against. You're right. The money is there. It's a vicious cycle of money that hundreds of millions of dollars comes into Idaho through COVID, goes to the hospitals, goes to the insurance companies. And you know who are big contributors to Little and Company?
I know. I've done the numbers.
And it's a great return on their investment to put a few hundred thousand dollars or even a few million dollars into those campaigns when hundreds of millions are coming back. The same thing with the workforce development and the cronies there. We put $80 million into Idaho Launch. friends of Brad Little PAC or Brad Little's reelection campaign gets a few dozens of thousands of dollars, and that's great for the PAC, but it hurts Idaho. It hurts Idaho because of that cycle of money. And so you just need good people to run on principles. You need the people of Idaho to understand that it's not the money, it's the principles you should be voting for. And so institutions like the Idaho Freedom Foundation, like other organizations around the state who are working to inform Idaho about the kind of politicians you actually have. And you know what? I don't diss on outside groups. Outside groups are also valuable for letting people know what goes on in Idaho, because they have the ability to get the messaging out.
Well, I think the Idaho public has to have a revaluation of the people they've been voting for. I think it's something that Chris Troupas had said on the radio. Drive your ATVs, watch your football, drink your beer, and we'll run the country. Well, that seems to be the philosophy here, and it's been to the detriment of the people who paid the taxes, because I don't think a lot of them have figured out yet that there has been a scam going on going back to, I would say, 2000, where we have had these series of governors that have been elected to office that have basically run ripshod over the people. And I admit that the same thing goes for Butch Otter. The same thing goes for Kemp Thorne. And of course, then we have Little on top of it here. And I guess they were grooming our lieutenant governor to be the next governor, but he's not going to do it. So Little's going to run again, and we're going to wind up with the same garbage.
Yeah. And so there's an opportunity here, though. I'm an optimist that there's an opportunity for somebody to step up and say, you know what, I'm here to work for the people. I'm not here to work for IACI or the Realtors Association or the Hospital Association. I'm here to work for the people. And so you can vote for the big money, and they'll put ads out against me and trash me and everything, or you can listen to the people and give the people a shot for once and see what happens. You know, some states have done this. South Dakota with Kristi Noem did it, and she did great. Florida did it with DeSantis. You know, it just roll the dice once. See what happens, Idaho. Try it out.
Oh, listen, I can't agree with you more. I mean, like I said, I rolled the dice with Fulcher. I rolled the dice with Labrador. I mean, even with Labrador, what did they do? They took a Tommy Ahlquist, who sure didn't want to be the governor, but he sure did split the Mormon vote between him and Labrador. That was the whole key. This is why they did that.
Yeah.
I mean, when you see these two candidates wind up with 30 and 30 or so of the vote, and Little with 37%, it tells you they do want somebody different. They just don't have the right person yet.
Yeah. You know what I would do? I'd repeal the grocery tax. I'd get property tax. I'd put a freeze on property taxes, so nobody's tax goes up. As growth happens, in fact, everybody's tax goes down a little bit as you have more economic growth. And that's the way to wean ourselves off the property tax morphine drip. And we've flattened the income tax. We can lower that too. Idaho government has way more money than it needs. Idaho households do not. So let's repeal the grocery tax, freeze the property tax, and then over time it gets frozen out of existence, and continue to lower the income tax, and imagine the economic growth that would happen in Idaho.
I don't think people understand that they're paying the bulk of the taxes. It's not the commercial properties or the industry that's paying. They're only about 30, 35%. Mm-hmm. The rest of it is on the taxpayer, on the individual, the people who own the homes and have the small businesses, to be very honest with you. I don't see any effort to change that. And I've talked about it many, many times. My big question is, where are you going to find a Donald Trump of Idaho?
I don't know. Where are we going to find him, Bob? Who is it? Who in the Idaho legislature right now could do it?
That's a really good question. You have some really good legislators who are very conservative, but I'm not sure any of them want to come in and challenge because they're all afraid of the same thing. The kickback that they're going to get from the bad press that's going to be all over the place and the fact that they have to raise millions of dollars to fight it.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's a few good eggs there. I'm looking for the one who will step forward and do it. You know, Priscilla Giddings had that kind of spine.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I was sorry to see her leave.
Yeah, she was one of those ones that no matter how long she was in the legislature, she wasn't going to cave. Her score stayed high the whole time she was in there. And so that kind of a person. The unfortunate thing is the longer you're there, the more you start to cave towards establishment. We've even seen some of my great colleagues when I was in the legislature now cozy up to establishment and leadership, and their voting has changed. And they're now becoming more of the system and saying, no, don't pressure the system, don't pressure. They're starting to talk like we were talked to. And so it's really frustrating to see that formerly great conservatives eventually cave to the system too. And so there's the few rare ones that stay. I'm looking for a Priscilla Giddings type.
Well, I tell you, I think it's like a sugar high. The more sugar they eat, and the longer they stay in, the worse their voting becomes in terms of conservatism. And I've seen that happen throughout the years. You know, sugar is the thing that feeds a cancer. Mm-hmm. Well, longevity in our legislative branch seems to feed the same cancer of spending.
Yeah, I agree. And the system rewards the conformist, that you want a chairmanship, you got to go along to get along. Don't call us out. You know, we can't repeal the grocery tax. Just raise the credit a little bit, go along with us. And so you want to be here a long time. Your elections will be just easy peasy if you're not sticking your neck out and making us look bad. We'll donate to your campaign. And so it rewards the conformist, rewards the go along to get along. And, It's hard for legislators to resist that for long periods of time.
Well, I'd love to see somebody come in and just upset the apple cart and turn it over, because what's been going on over the last 6 years with Little at the helm
is getting
pretty scary for me as far as I'm concerned. I don't see anything happening that's helping people in my situation, which is basically retired.
Yeah. Well, Brad Little's a bit of a Joe Biden type of a character for Idaho. You hardly ever see him. You're wondering who's running the governor's office. He comes and gives the shortest State of the State address ever, which I appreciate, by the way, because I don't need to hear that. But it's like he's not in control anymore. His job there is to support his cronies and veto the stuff that hurts his cronies. And that's about all he does. Signs everything else.
But then again, he is part and parcel of the hierarchy that's been in Idaho politics going back, at least 20 years, maybe 30 years.
Yeah.
And I've only been here for 30 years, but I saw the actual change in my own mind take place about 20, 25 years ago. And what I see happening here is a slow but sure deterioration of the legislature, aside from the few candidates that we can get elected in the conservative bailiwick. I don't know how you change that, Ron. I know you're trying to change it. I'm trying to change it.
We're getting there. We're increasing the conservative numbers. It's slower than my patience allows, really, but we get more than we lose each time. We're slowly building it up. We just need to keep rewarding the conservatives and holding the squishes accountable. Winder is gone. That would have never happened 20 years ago.
But I agree.
To do it. There's a few others that need to be gone that support the system. instead of supporting the Idaho people. And so this next election, I'm looking forward to it. We now have people on record about supporting their own pay raise and rejecting a grocery tax repeal, and then rejecting Medicaid reform, and maybe even opposing school choice. We have their record, and that will be used to a great extent in the next election. And we can have these cycles where we increase the conservatives more than we lose them.
You know what I find very interesting? In the last election, Ammon Bundy ran as an independent.
Yep.
And the shock was that he got about 17.5% of the vote, second highest in history, and for an independent. And I think that scared the daylights out of the administration and the legislature itself, or the people that really control what's going on.
Yeah.
That may have been why they went after him so hard.
Absolutely. And so you see what they do. Anything that threatens their system, threatens their gravy train, they go after. And so I'll say this maybe as a parting shot to your audience. People of Idaho, when you hear establishment, when you hear a governor, when you hear Senate or House leadership saying that, oh, those guys, they just can't work with anyone else. They keep having these ideas of repealing the grocery tax. All they want to do is cut taxes, whatever. Those are the ones you want. When you have the establishment criticizing legislators for being hard to work with or too stuck in the mud, those are the ones you want. That's what they say about the conservatives, because they want to mold how things go. They don't, the conservatives expose them for their lies. So watch out what leadership says.
I don't disagree with you. I'm just hoping that we may just find somebody to step up to the plate and challenge Little in this next race. Even if it's just a challenge, that's for the sake of challenge.
Let's go. Let's do it.
Well, from your lips to God's ears, my friend.
You guys are amazing. I love the Idaho Pulse. You guys are doing great work.
I thank you very much for your time again. I do appreciate it. And let's keep this going, if you know what I mean. Every week, let's keep pounding them.
Let's do it. You're great. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you.
Peace out.
Take care.
See, in this world, there's two kinds of people, my friend. Those with loaded guns and those who dig. Thank you.